He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday morning. It is the November 6th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. And it looks like an overbought market last week. Maybe it was irrationally exuberant. Is quieting down a little bit this week. Right now we have the Dow down just 6 points. It's at 34,055. We've got the S&P 500 up 3 points to 4,361. The NASDAQ is up 33 to 13,512. We've got the small caps getting hit a bit. They're down 70 basis points, down 12 points on the Russell 2000. Crude oil up $1.24 to $81.75 as OPEC keeps their voluntary cut in place. That was 1 million barrels they took off of the market daily. And gold is down $7.90 right now to $19.91. The war premium in gold and in oil seems to be fading. Silver is down 9 cents to $23.19. And here was the big story last week with interest rates plunging. I mean, down 50 basis points from the high. Well, it should be expected that they would be rebounding some here today. We're up 8 basis points, which is quite a bit. We're back, we go from 4.55 to 4.64 today.
And we got the Treasury floating some, we got the Treasury floating a good bit of debt this week, so that's going to be in the supply.
So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And that's all I can say is, wow, I mean, what a stunning turnaround last week in the market. I mean, it was stretched to the max. I showed a chart of the Dow before we began last week, and I said, you know what, this thing is perched right on a precipice here. It's very close to making a death cross, which it still is, by the way. And it just looked ugly, and there were a lot of charts that really looked ugly. And I said, from an oversold position like this, one of two things is going to happen. It's going to snap back big time like a rubber band, or it's going to break support. And luckily, we had the snapback like the rubber band last week.
Right. Yep.
But I think it snapped back too quickly. It smacked, to me, of a lot of short covering. I think there was a very crowded trade that was short the U.S. Treasuries.
Right, yep.
And I think there was a very crowded trade that was short the high PE stuff. And, you know, it just, once that starts to turn and those short traders start to panic and start to cover their short positions, it has kind of a cascading effect. And that's what we witnessed in the market last week. And in my newsletter on Friday, I said, you know, I think I would suspect that the market will cool off this week. And so far, that is how we started the week. We had a Dow up 565 on Friday. We got a Goldilocks jobs report. You know, it wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold.
Yeah, Goldilocks week, really.
Yes, right. We had a Goldilocks leak week coming from Chairman Powell. It was just kind of that soft landing scenario came back into play. The economy not too hot, but at the same time not too cold. We did see some weakness showing up in the jobs for the first time in quite some time. This Thursday, I think it'll be interesting to see what the jobless claims report does if it comes in bigger than expected again. That means that the jobs market might be starting to cool off. The NASDAQ was up 210 on Friday. It had a huge week. I think it was up 6%, something like that. That's an outsized move caused by a lot of circumstances converging all at once, not the least of which was panic short covering. I think there was a big short interest built up in the market. So anyways, the market bolted higher. It was the best week of 2023, believe it or not, for the S&P 500.
And what, I guess on like five-day win streak or something like that.
Yes, it was up all 5 days last week. And let's not forget, I mean, the earnings, I would say it was a pretty darn good. I'd give this earnings season a grade of B-plus so far. We've got about 80%, 85% of the companies now reporting. And outside of a few big disappointments, for the most part, you know, the companies once again did their thing. They are doing their job to keep the market going by by keeping those earnings growing and by meeting estimates and by even beating estimates. And about 80% of the cases, once again, the components of the S&P 500 beat their estimates. So, again, it was the best week of the year, a significant turnaround from just a few days before that, when the benchmark indexes slid into correction territory.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago today is when we were kind of brushing up against five on the U.S. U.S. 10-year, and then of course what we finished the week last week. I mean, like you said, basically from around, you know, what, 492 or so to all the way to 453 or something of that nature.
Yes, right in there, and that's an overbought bond market, an overbought. It went from oversold to overbought in 1 week.
Right.
So that tells me there were a lot of forces at work in there, and you can't, you just can't rule out that there wasn't a lot of short covering. Which
yeah, you had a lot of hedge funds. Yeah, you actually had a lot of hedge funds that were short treasuries.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That, and a lot of them covered that trade on Friday, like you said.
They panicked. They panicked and covered. Took some profits off the table before it got any worse. And now we're going to return to a more normal market this week. We've got just seven weeks left in 2023. It looks like the earnings will come in this year at about $221 per share, which beats the all-time record that we set last year. And as of now, we're looking for record earnings to continue next year, and we're looking for record earnings to continue the year after that in 2025. But there's two components to this now. Those earnings change. They didn't change this past quarter with this quarter almost in the books. If anything, they went up a little bit. The multiple bounced around. Believe it or not, the multiple went from 17.1 last Monday to 17.8 by Friday. That's how much interest rates impact. So you get a 50 basis point drop in interest rates, and you get almost, you know, a full 100 basis points increase in the multiple. And those two remain inversely related. This week I would look for the interest rates to settle, to go back up some and take a little bit off of that multiple. Maybe we settle the week at 17.5, somewhere in there. But it was a stunning reversal. Not something you see too often, but it just
not
kind of,
in the bond market. I mean,
nope.
That's massive,
especially weird, is that huge bounce in the bond market.
Yeah. I mean, there's, and you got to remember, I mean, the size of the bond market is much, much bigger than the, than on the equity side. And on the equity side, we're always used to, hey, a percent move here, a 2% move there, a 10% move here in a stock sometimes, right? And it's, you know, on the bond side, 0.4% doesn't, may not sound like a lot, but it's a big number.
Yeah, so. I mean, that would be like a 10% move in the S&P 500 for bonds to go from 5 down to 4.5. That's like a market or a stock going from 50 to 45, 10%, right?
Right.
So, you had to have had a lot of short, some big, huge short bets. I think they were looking at how much the Treasury was borrowing, how much the Treasury was going to need for the refunding. Neither of those numbers exceeded, you know, the numbers that helped bring out some of the shorts out of the bond market. But most of all, it was Jerome Powell on Thursday hinting at And the market definitely believes that they're done hiking interest rates.
Yeah, so, it'll be interesting. We've got a lot of Fed speak this week, and so it's pretty much there's really not too many big economic reports this week. It's really if you look at the list of Fed speakers, they must be collecting some checks.
Yes, and it's all it will take is for a couple of them, But Powell has the loudest.
Yeah, and Powell speaks on this Thursday at some panel.
If he were to say higher for longer, we still have work to do. You would see a lot of the gains from last week be undone. So as always, we have our seat belts fastened, and we're ready to face a new week. We had a very good week last week also, but it was like shooting fish in a barrel last week. What will this week bring? More on that when we come back. It's the Best Stocks Now show. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we'll take a look here real quickly at the companies that are still going to report earnings this week. Last week was like the biggest week of all, just a huge week of earnings. And now we've got about 80% of the 500 S&P 500 companies in the books. But still, there's some important ones still out there. So today, Monday, how can we not be all over the Realty Income earnings report, Barry, after the close? Seeking Alpha's favorite stock.
O's about that. O reports today, it sounds like then. Huh?
Yes. Oh, and the REITs had a good week last week because they're interest rate sensitive.
Yeah, they are. I mean, companies that have a cash flow, right? That future cash flow stream is worth more as interest rates go down. So
yeah,
it's as simple as that.
Okay, and then after the bellwether Realty Income reports, Vertex Pharmaceutical, BioNTech, they've already reported. They call it the COVID cliff those companies went over, Pfizer and BioNTech.
Yeah, well, I think we all welcome the COVID cliff, right?
Yes. Diamondback Energy will report today. Goodyear Tire, TripAdvisor. Dish has reported. That was a disaster. Alpha and Omega Semiconductor. Shockwave Medical. And then tomorrow.
Not as much flair as last week, huh?
Tomorrow it's going to be Lucid, which is having their own issues. In fact, the whole EV sector is having issues. We're going to get Kava Group, Gilead Sciences, Occidental Petroleum. That's a big one. That's one of Warren Buffett's.
Warren Buffett will be keeping an eye on that one, right?
Uber's going to report. Datadog, Devon Energy. There's still a fair amount. Yeah. Rivian, Mosaic.
Fertilizer. Throw some fertilizer in there.
Yeah. Right? D.R. Horton, Robinhood, Taser, and a few others. Okay, and then on Wednesday reporting will be Disney. That's a big one. Disney will be reporting along with Beyond Meat. I've got a hamburger story to tell today. One of our turnaround stocks. Callaway will report on Wednesday. Triple D, that's
3D printing.
3D printing. Biogen, Roblox. No, it's a pretty big week. Fisker. I thought I was going to have an easy week this week. And then on Thursday, Plug Power, Novavax, Illumina, AstraZeneca. Okay, so anyways, that's who will be reporting this week. Now, with what we have in the books now, here's where we stand. This is very important. This is the one I update every single week. Very, very critical. 81% of the companies have reported. This is Q3 that they're reporting. We're in Q4 now. It will end on December 31st, and we'll have another earnings season start mid-January. We're already talking about mid-January. 82% of the companies have beat their earnings estimates. That's very good. On the sales side, 62%. That's a little weaker than usual. This quarter is expected to come in somewhere around $58 per share. So you can kind of see the run rate where we're at. If you multiply that by four, we're running at a 232. Yeah. Which we're going to come at 221 this year. So I'm just saying that this inertia where we're at now, we're on track for another record year next year. Now, that can change. There's lots of things that can happen. That's why we update it weekly, okay? And the number that we're at now is going to beat quite handily the original estimate, which was about 56. So we're going to beat it by a couple percent, and it's going to be a bigger number than last year, 3.7%. The third quarter of this year, the growth in earnings, 3.7% year over year. The S&P 500 forward P.E. ratio, that's the current price of the S&P 500 divided by the next 12 months of earnings estimates, goes up from 17.1 to 17.8. That's really unusual for the multiple to expand that much, but it's because interest rates went down 50 basis points. The long-term average, the five-year average is 18.7. The 10-year average is 17.5, which kind of is the mid range. I wouldn't be surprised to see us pull back more into that 17.5 area.
Yeah, and that's a 3.5% move just in the multiple, which, you know, explains a lot of the move in the market last week. Right?
That's why you had this big, giant, outsized move in the market. It was a combination of earnings.
Yeah, and earnings, too. Yeah, I mean, the other piece of that percentage, right, to kind of break it apart, is the other piece of that percentage is how much those earnings estimates and earnings, how well
yes.
they came in.
And the multiplier definitely played a bigger role last week than the earnings did, even though the earnings were good. Okay, so now, what is happening in the market today as we begin a new week? Well, there's a deal. Hilton Grand Vacations agrees to buy Blue Green Vacations. And I've seen some Blue Green Vacations. I think we have some downtown Charleston. And I've seen Hilton Grand Vacations. We have that too, downtown Charleston. Well, they're going to get together in a merger. Now, here's an interesting story. South Korean stocks surge after a new short selling ban. They're prohibiting stock short selling until June of 2024 in a move that triggered a big rally for equities and increased trading volume. So I'm just saying that the shorting of stocks, that's a big industry. There's a lot of that that goes on. The hedge funds do it big time. That's why they call them hedge funds.
Yeah, and then there's you got to break that apart. Some of those short positions, right, are for risk mitigation. A lot of them, you know, that's kind of what options were designed for. And then of course nowadays it gets into a little bit more of a gambling, you know, mentality when you have some shorting.
And you can create an extreme situation where the most popular short was GameStop.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And
I think
a little
a Netflix documentary or something about
social
that
media group got together and ganged up as just a group of people, a loosely knit group of people ganged up and started buying the heck out of GameStop. And the big shorts that were in there took it in the shorts. I mean, they got wiped out. It wiped out several hedge funds.
Well, and theoretically, right, a stock can go up to infinity. So when you're shorting a stock, you really have, you know, an infinite, right, amount of risk, you know, in theory.
Yes.
Versus buying a stock, right, all you can do, buy a stock for $100, it goes to zero where you lost your $100.
Yes.
So
you can lose a lot in a short.
It's an asymmetric
payout. A short
payout.
That goes wrong. Yeah. I've seen a few guys in the business that had a big short position. For their clients, the short went wrong, and I never saw him return to work again, that guy that I worked with. Ugh. Okay, when we come back, let's take a look at some of these predictions on the economy from a Duke professor and from a big Deutsche Bank strategist. We'll be right back. This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, Silicon Valley Bank was not a one-off. Many more banks will fail, says Duke professor, Campbell Harvey, who was on CNBC on Friday. We all remember that. I mean, those were some pretty scary times when we had banks failing in the U.S. That's scary.
That was an important part, I thought, of this. You know, they always report early in the earnings season, and, you know, really, really kind of went through without much fanfare, right? Particularly in the mid-sized banks. You know, you're always going to get some headlines on the J.P. Morgans of the world, but. I would have thought, I mean, if you looked back at where, you know, those 20-year, you know, long-term treasury rates were, you know, say in March of earlier this year, and then where they were, this past September, you would have thought that that wouldn't have looked great for balance sheets, but, at least for the earnings season, it made it through.
Well, we have no exposure. I mean, yes, I know there's the theory that you should be diversified and you should own a little bit of something in every sector, you know, have some exposure. We don't believe in that. We believe in being tactical. And the banks are not a favorable sector to be in here at this point in time, and they haven't been for quite some time. He says there are many banks indeed. We've estimated that perhaps 10% of all banks look pretty similar to SVB. That's 10%. There's a lot of banks. I mean, that of all the sectors in my database, oh, man, there must be 1,000 banks. He's saying that 10% look pretty similar to SVB. But here's the caveat. He says, and those long rates going up is punishing. Well, what he's referring to is a lot of these banks, Silicon Valley Bank, own long-term bonds, treasuries. And they got whacked as interest rates. Luckily, interest rates came back down again. Then he also points to the commercial real estate loans. When they come in for renegotiation, he says, you better watch out. The banks would like to renegotiate those at today's level of rates. So the banks are not out of the woods yet. I just would avoid that sector. Now, according to Deutsche Bank strategist Jim Reed, this is, you know, this they debate this ad nauseum. When will the next recession be here?
What's the old joke? The economists have called 48 of the West three recessions, right?
Yes, exactly.
They're very pessimistic.
Well, Som Rule says recession could be nearer than you think. He said the markets priced in a new dovish landscape last week following the ISM Fed and jobs report. But let's see, his thesis is the U.S. economy is getting close to triggering the Som rule. So he has a rule.
He has his own rule.
Created by former Fed economist Claudia Som. Okay. It's either his mother or his wife or his sister. To forecast recession more in real time focuses on the unemployment rate. Well, I agree with that. I think the unemployment rate, I think the beginning of the slide will be show up in the jobs market first. He says a recession is indicated when the 3-month unemployment rate average rises 0.5 percentage point above the low rate of the previous 12 months. So he has his own indicator, which I'm sure you could plot out. When this happens, the U.S. economy has always been in or about to be in a recession. He says it is currently 0.33 percentage points above the lows. So one to watch.
And it's hard to, I mean, it's hard to, data, right? I mean, like you said, it always happens, right, based on whatever the rule is. But then at the same time, we just had what was the GDP number, right, that just came out? And
it
then, of course,
really good.
Yeah, and some of the GDP projections, right, are, you know, on a go-forward basis have been raised. So it's just, you know, you never want to say kind of it's different this time. But, you know, in this instance, you know, there's parts of the, you know, economy that are, you know, particularly on the job side, that it's hard to go in recession when everyone's, you know, working, right? That wants
yes.
to work at least. So.
Well, oil remains elevated, but it's not at 95 anymore. Our gasoline here in South Carolina, I paid $2.95. Saudi Arabia will continue its voluntary cut of 1 million barrels per day. And, of course, the peace talks between Saudi Arabia and Israel are off for now until things quiet down. And I saw the queen, I think she's the queen of Jordan. Well, she came out with a scathing rebuke of Israel and very pro-Palestinian. And, of course, the world is taking sides. They're lining up on one side or the other, pro-Palestinian, pro-Israel. That's always been a dividing line for a lot of people and a lot of countries. And that debate is being played out all over again. Elon Musk unveils Grok. That's his AI bot with real-time access to X, which is Twitter, info. He says it's going to blow ChatGPT out of the water.
Grok, huh?
Grok. Now, I did notice that Tesla, which is also going after a gigafactory in Germany, he says it's a massive... His AI will have a massive advantage over other models such as ChatGPT. Grok is an AI model after The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So it's intended to answer almost anything, far harder, and even suggest questions to ask. The prototype of the chatbot, which Musk said was designed to have a little more humor in its responses. Oh, boy, we've got AI with a sense of humor.
Yeah, whose version of humor?
It comes back and says, that's a stupid question. What are you, an idiot? Is being tested among a limited group of verified users. Well, I'm a verified user. They haven't asked me to test it yet. Maybe I can sign up. Okay, Tesla gains on report it may produce a 20. This rumor continues to go around. $25,000 vehicle.
Yeah, it produces at its factory in Germany, which, you know, I mean, that's what we talk about. You know, from a volume standpoint, right? You know, they have the position in volume. So, you know, if you want to make one $25,000, it's going to price a lot of other out of the business, right?
Well, I mean, look at Lucid. They cut their prices ahead of the holidays. So for their Grand Touring model, they're dropping it from $125,000 to $115,000. The problem is, this is one of the big problems with this EV revolution that has really stalled out here big time because of the price of the cars.
Right.
And with today's interest rates, that makes it even worse. They're reducing the price of their Air Touring model from $95,000 to $88,000. I think I paid that for my first condo, let alone a Lucid sports car. The ongoing EV price wars have compelled car makers to put their revenue figures ahead of margins. Okay, well, that burns cash, but you can only do that for so long. So Lucid is up against it. Saudi Arabia is a big investor in Lucid. Now we've got the exchangeable battery swapping stations. That's going to come to India. I don't see how that works out
that
from
was
a
the,
logistics point yeah, of view myself.
That was the one when we wrote the article on, I think it was NEO. It was one of the, it was when we were writing some articles on some of the Chinese EV makers a couple of years back. And yeah, that was an interesting model that, you know, that I came across where
right.
you just drive in. The thing lifts up your, you know, pulls the battery pack out, puts a new one in, and then you know, you go on, kind of like a, I guess,
yeah.
an oil change.
But think but, how labor have intensive of, is. I mean, they
well,
got
you'd have to have a lot of batteries, I guess.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
I mean, but the whole pack, I guess, would just lift up, and then you know, maybe they set it off to the side and charge it. I don't know. It sounds like a fire hazard.
There's a big problem. I mean, the electrical vehicle stocks, they've lost their buzz. Stunning partnerships could be the new plan. I mean, these little guys like Arrival and Volcon and Canoe and Blink Charging and ChargePoint and Polestar and Nikola and Lucid and Fisker, they're in survival mode. Rivian, they're in survival mode.
Right.
If you're losing $33,000 and Rivian's one of the bigger ones on every car, it doesn't take long before...
I saw one of their SUVs recently. That was
I haven't seen that. Yeah. I didn't know they made an
here.
SUV.
Yeah, I didn't either. I had to look it up after
yeah.
my wife said, I saw a Rivian SUV, and
that's
I'm like,
wild.
They make those?
And then, of course, you've got the big automakers saying, you know, we're going to slow down on this whole EV thing. All right, when we come back, we're going to look underneath the surface. I got my hamburger story. Remind me when I come
All
back.
All right.
Okay, and then we'll talk about what I see underneath the surface of the market today. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Okay, my burger story, and I was reminded of this. I read that Burger King has no plans to expand its plant-based offerings in the U.S. in the near term.
Okay, so no more Impossible Whopper.
Yeah, I think they're going to keep it on there.
One,
but,
yeah.
you know, that's another thing that really has not taken off, okay, like they thought it would. It's a very competitive, low-margin business. The solar is going the same route. The hydrogen is going the same route. There's just a lot of things that aren't working in the market these days. That's one of them. But there's a Burger King about 40 miles north of us. That's the closest one that I know of, up in Georgetown, which is a fairly new one. So I stop in there from time to time just to see if our friend Patrick Doyle is busy with the turnaround.
Get
okay?
your boots on the ground, right?
That's yeah. Our... I mean, who better to sample? I mean, I'm just an expert. They should hire me to tell them what's wrong with certain things. But anyways,
it's no in and out, but yeah,
you're
an expert, though.
I'm in line and at the drive-thru, and I see a new offering. Okay, I think it was for Halloween. It was called the Ghost Pepper Whopper. I said, well, you know what?
No.
This is way out of the norm. I'm going to get one. And, you know, I got back in my car, and I'm driving home. I open it up. It's got kind of an orange bun. I think they did it for Halloween. And it's got, like, black kind of burnt toasted onions on the bun. It was fantastic.
Was it? I was waiting.
It was, other than an In-N-Out burger, it was the best fast food burger I've ever had. And I saved a little bit when I got home, even my wife. Now, you got to be able to stomach hot.
Right.
But we have a large Latino population here in America, and they like hot food
yeah.
like that. Now, if you don't like hot food, if it gives you a stomach upset, I wouldn't get one. But, man, I'm telling you what.
And an orange bun, huh?
The beef was great on it. It was hot. It was tasty. I couldn't put it down. That's how good it was. So, anyways, that's the QSR quality restaurants or restaurant brands which brought in Patrick Doyle, who turned Domino's Pizza around. Now he's at work with Burger King's four brands. And that's all I can say, man. That thing was good. I said, something's working there. They're making bold moves here at the turnaround. Okay, Berkshire Hathaway reported over the weekend the usual stuff there from our friend Warren Buffett. Now, as I look at the market, the biggest winner today is Blue Green Vacations out of Boca Raton, Florida. It's up 105%. As Hilton Grand Vacations, which I think, well, I know they have one. They have one right down on Bay Street, Charleston. Mm-hmm. Yep. They have a big tower up in the Myrtle Beach area, and they had a lot of exposure when I was in San Diego for many years. That BVH is up 107%. Okay, the Dow, that's pretty quiet. Amgen's up 1.5%. Microsoft is up 1.1%. Of course, Microsoft had a very good report recently. Microsoft has taken off since that report. And Apple is down 1%, is up 1%. They had a very lukewarm earnings report last week that was not met with a lot of fanfare. On the downside in the Dow, Goldman Sachs down 1.4%, and the disaster of last week was Caterpillar. It's down another 1% today. Guess what the number one stock in the S&P 500 is today? A weight loss stock, one of the two. Lilly is up 4.1%. Lilly has the weight loss drug that is Mounjaro. They've got a new version coming out. It's supposed to get approved, for weight loss by the end of the year, although many doctors are prescribing it. Lilly is having a huge day. They also bought a company last week to get into the gene editing business. Booking.com is also a big winner in the S&P today. It's up 3.4%, one of the great stocks of all time, the former Priceline. Also, the utilities are having a good day because of this big drop in interest rates recently. Utilities are very interest rate sensitive. On the downside, the big disaster of the day is Dish Networks. Does anybody subscribe, I guess not, to Dish Networks anymore?
I haven't seen it. I mean, a Dish Network, you know, a lot of times you used to see it in businesses or other, you know, other places or, you know, in,
you had to have the dish and point it. It was now, via satellite.
Now it's DirecTV.
Especially in a rural area, right?
Now, even in rural area, I mean, it's usually, right? I just tend to see DirecTV nowadays. But
well, it's a disaster. Dish is down 21%. Yeah, 21% today. I don't think it's going to be in the S. It's at $4 a share. Maybe it's not in the S&P 500 anymore. I'll have to look and see. Paramount is down 6.5. Moderna is down 5.4. Here's another couple of stories in sectors that haven't worked out. The lithium, Albemarle is getting tagged today for 4%. A lithium producer, that has become a disaster area.
Yeah, solar stocks, like you said.
And I mean, the solar stocks. Look at Enphase is down another 4.2%.
Those projects, you know, those projects don't get done when cost of capital goes up and when you have interest rates go up to where they they've been, right? It kind of kills the deal when you're looking at a financial reason to should I do the project or not do the project. And
well, I see my big solar battery is 16% charged today, so I've switched over to the other one. It'll be back to 100% in 19 hours. Of course, you can't. It doesn't charge during the nighttime. And we're in full sun here. I have four big panels pointed right at the sun all day long. And it can't even keep up with what I do in my little office here. And God forbid there's ever any cloud cover because it doesn't work at all. So anyways, I decided to try it out. And I believe that, you know, if push comes to shove and that's all that there's is available, well, it's part of that emergency preparedness. All right, if you'd like to set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BEST. If you'd like to get that full newsletter, then after that, the scaled-down version of the newsletter, coming to you every Saturday, GundersonCapital.com. That's GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.